My name is Jackie Lamport. Today is Friday, May 28th. Welcome to the Capital Daily Podcast. Today on the show.
And then there's also the piece on the individual level. What intersects with that person's personal experience that makes it distinct? That might include things like someone's gender identity, but also how does that relate to, you know, maybe they're part of the BIPOC community or different pieces of identity that are also going to impact what they're going to need in terms of support.
For the last Good News Friday of Mental Health Awareness Month, we speak to Nick Sandor, the executive director of the Men's Therapy Center in Victoria, about how to best service the mental health needs of men of all backgrounds and identities. Today's episode of the podcast is sponsored by United Way's Blue Love Campaign for Mental Health. Please donate at uwgv.ca/blueLoveCampaign. Nick, can you tell me how you first got involved in this field?
Excellent question. So I've been working in nonprofits for about the better part of 10 years now. And I think I was just always inspired by helping community. I had a partner years ago that was working with a society in Edmonton, supporting people living with HIV. And I actually think I went to help put together a float for a parade and just got to know some of the folks and hear their stories. And so from then on, I was pretty committed to doing community work. I think my particular interest in mental health and specifically working with men comes from a place of trying to address gender-based violence. So we know how much gender socialization and masculine socialization has to do with our relationships across gender and with gender in ourselves. And so I was really keen to look at gender-based violence from the lens of supporting men and how do we do masculinity differently in a way that supports our own emotional wellness and relational wellness, but also improves our ability to engage in healthy relationships.
Mm-hmm. That was actually going to be my next question, was about men's mental health and how much of a focus there is on toxic masculinity and the impact it has on men themselves as well.
Absolutely. So I think that's such an interesting point to discuss. And I think it is challenging, maybe in terms of an intergenerational kind of discourse related to that. So what I mean by that is, you know, I think millennials and younger folks are really... we've kind of been socialized and we're kind of open to having this discussion about our identities and the fluidity and the choices and the different ways of doing things that comes with all of that. Now, when it comes to folks, from the baby boomer generation or earlier, these things weren't open for discussion and review and support and different ways of doing things as much. So I think when we talk about things like toxic masculinity, a big piece of that is thinking about your audience. Right. And first of all, what is actually going to be a supportive approach to engaging in these types of communications? But what is very clear is that we see, you know, this history of masculine socialization is very much relates to the work we do in mental health. And I think for men accessing mental health support, a big piece of that is the barriers around asking for help. Being vulnerable with our emotions is counterintuitive to that socialization. So, of course, you know, anyone in the community looking to receive counseling support, sometimes people feel shame, reluctance to engage in those things. But I think because of how we're socialized to be men and the history related to that, there's that extra layer of difficulty or kind of barriers for accessing those services. Maybe on a personal level, of course, there's different reasons why people from different identities would have challenges accessing services.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like in recent years there's been a bit of a tide turning when it comes to toxic masculinity and men looking for help?
I think so, and kind of in various ways. A big piece of that I just noticed in my own life, being out in the community and seeing people around, is a big one is parenting. And I think seeing younger fathers really engage with their children and doing those things like being silly and dancing and talking about feelings and just bringing forward a new way of doing things is something I notice a lot. The younger generation of parents and then the generations behind them. So I think we are making a shift, and like all cultural shifts, you know, it can take generations to accomplish getting where we want to go. But I am seeing good progress and seeing lots more men, not only open to having these conversations, but interested, because what they're seeing is the benefit of being vulnerable, of positioning ourselves as a listener, going against some of those masculine stereotypes. So I think not only is it a conversation that's kind of bubbling at the cultural surface, but also a conversation that we're recognizing is actually improving our lives as we work through those changes.
Men's mental health doesn't just refer to cis men. And for people who don't know what that means, it means their gender identity and sex are matched or the same. Can you tell me about the services that you offer that focus directly on the mental health of trans, non-binary, two-spirit, queer, or gender fluid people?
Absolutely. So, you know, we're mindful in our role of being an agency that supports folks' mental health, that the first thing we need to be thinking about is safety, right? So if we're talking about someone accessing our services that is like a trans man or non-binary or two-spirited, genderqueer, we really have to be paying close attention to the, first of all, the inequity that's in our society around gender diversity, and that those folks are going to need additional or even different or distinct types of supports that might not be the case with cis men, right? So it's paying attention to those details around language on pronouns, for instance, right? I know when some of our older forms and stuff, that were for clients and stuff like that, everything was addressed as he, and we weren't putting they, them. And so as we improve our processes, it's, you know, including more pronouns and really diversifying how we understand masculinity. So our services are open to all folks that either identify as masculine or cis men, two-spirit, non-binary. If people are like female identified, we generally refer out to another service just because of the nature of our work. But making sure that continuum of care is in place. And I think the most important thing to do when working with folks from diverse gender identities is really just being a good listener and, you know, listening to what people need, kind of checking our assumptions, right? And it's really great to connect with people in the community to understand more about what we assume is okay that actually does need more attention and some intentional changes put into place. And I think the other piece of that, I mean, there's the listening, and the other piece is just really, even for myself as a cis man, is I sometimes don't even understand the challenges, right? So just kind of really just being open-minded to that ongoing learning and, you know, being comfortable with the fact that we're never going to get it completely right. We're always growing and readjusting and consulting with community. So all those pieces are a part of it. And we, you know, we have quite a diverse staff team in terms of gender identities. So I think a lot of us are quite mindful of, you know, how that interacts with the work that we do. And we're having constant discussions about it at staff meetings, one-on-one, just how do we make this place safe? Because if you're doing trauma counseling for folks in the community, I mean, the first thing that has to be in place is that people feel safe and comfortable to actually come into the center and meet with the folks that work here.
I was going to ask, actually, when it comes to people who are non-binary or two-spirit or gender fluid, how difficult is it to make a place that's identifying itself as a men's therapy center feel welcoming?
I think there are lots of difficulties with that. I think some of it has to do with messaging, so how we actually are perceived in the community and what kind of messages we're sending out. That's a big piece of it. And I think the other challenge of it too, is when it comes to identities is, of course, you know, we can create this picture of like a stereotype of a certain type of identity, but even within, you know, say trans communities, there is a lot of diversity within that too, right? Mm-hmm. So the two pieces of it are, what are we doing to support those identities and make it known that this place is safe, whether it's, you know, the signage, it can be as simple as bathroom signage, the messaging to make sure that we're using gender inclusive language, including pronouns in our activities and meetings as something to create a safe space to discuss those things. And then there's also the piece on the individual level. So what intersects with that person's personal experience that makes it distinct? And that might include things like not only looking at, you know, someone's gender identity, but also how does that relate to, you know, maybe they're part of the BIPOC community, or like being low income, or different pieces of identity that are also going to impact how they engage with services and what they're going to need in terms of support.
Mm-hmm. Would you also say that in recent years there's been a pickup in addressing the fact that there are so many different types of men and people, and there's a broad range of issues, and it's not just the manly man that we think about or we used to think about?
Absolutely. I think that's a huge piece of it is, and I think that's something to celebrate, is that we are creating this really diverse scope of what masculinity is. And, you know, hopefully it's, I know sometimes in masculinity studies and stuff, they use this term like the man box, and we're kind of trying to knock down those walls and honor who people are authentically for themselves. So that's a big piece of it as well.
And we'll take a quick break for a word from our sponsor. Today's episode of the podcast is sponsored by United Way's Blue Love Campaign for Mental Health. United Way takes the pandemic's mental health effects to heart. We are in year two of COVID-19, and almost half of Vancouver Islanders report worsening mental health due to the pandemic. The need for counseling, outreach, and peer support services will continue to grow in the months ahead. United Way's Blue Love Campaign for Mental Health will help fill those gaps in services, with a goal to raise $1 million by the end of this December to fund counseling, peer support, and outreach services across our communities, as well as to raise awareness of mental health and reduce stigma. Please donate at uwgv.ca/blue love campaign today, and your gift will be matched by Peninsula Co-op. You also focus a lot on trauma. Can you tell me about that work?
Yeah, so like I said, with trauma work, trauma is, you know, safety is the one priority. And it's really interesting with trauma because it's, you know, a word in the community that can be defined so many different ways, right? And people of all backgrounds and experiences are probably going to have some sort of traumatic experience in their life. And so sometimes the way these things are distinct is like small T trauma or big T trauma, right? So really, I mean, our big focus is looking at specific types of trauma. So things like physical abuse, sexualized violence, psychological abuse, or victims of crime, right? So we're looking at those, I guess, events in a person's life that really disrupt their ability to regulate their nervous system, to engage in relationships in a healthy way, right? Because we know that trauma is also an intergenerational phenomenon that people experience. So not only are we addressing that person's particular needs, but we're also trying to build kind of the skills and the container that's necessary to break like the cycles of trauma and violence that tend to exist. So if we can help someone to maybe accept and address their traumas that they've experienced, well, rather than those behaviors and experiences, you know, passing that on to their children or people in their lives or in their community, well, addressing that can actually change those cycles. So sometimes I do like to think of it as kind of an upstream approach to addressing gender-based violence, because we can kind of break the cycle of those behaviors that tend to be problematic. Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me more about the specific services that you offer and how people can access them?
Absolutely. So there's no referrals needed to access our services. Anyone can just walk in the door and request to see a counselor. And there's different streams that people can access services through. So anyone that walks in the door, what they would do first is they'd meet with our victim services worker, who also does our intake. So we have actually two victim services worker, George and Sue, and you would sit down with them for probably about an hour. They'd get to learn a little bit about you, what you're hoping to achieve through counseling, what kind of commitment you'd like to make, and what kind of needs you would need from a counselor. Like, for instance, you know, we were talking earlier about, say, if someone wanted to access services and they identify as a trans man, well, if we can partner them with a staff member that also comes from that community, well, there's going to be some commonality there that might be comforting for that client. And then from that point, they go onto a wait list, and then they will be connected with a counselor. So during COVID, we've seen a really influx in the need for our services. So our wait list is a longer than we'd like right now. But in the interim, we're trying to provide emotional support where we can and keep trying to connect people with counselors.
United Way's Blue Love Campaign is going to be helping you out. Can you tell me how?
Absolutely. So we're really excited to be included in the Blue Love campaign by United Way. And we're working in collaboration with United Way and a number of other mental health services in Victoria to kind of do a collective fundraising campaign. So I know the goal by the end of this year is to, I think December, is to raise $1 million that goes back into community mental health services. So we're all kind of working together to, you know, do that community outreach piece, do some advocacy around mental health, and kind of engage community in that spirit of giving towards mental health. Because as you know, many folks would know, it is very challenging to access mental health. It's either, you know, community-based services that tend to have long wait lists. It's either kind of an acute issue where you might be, you know, accessing services through Island Health, but generally those things have to get quite severe to get to that point, or kind of urgent or crisis-based in many instances, or kind of long-term care. And then the other piece is like private practice counseling, which is pretty inaccessible financially for most folks. So I think part of this bringing community together and raising money is really about trying to make counseling services most accessible for the people that need them and don't actually have access to those services.
Nick, thank you so much for this. This has been great.
Absolutely. And if you're interested, for folks listening, if you're interested in contributing to the Blue Love campaign, if you just go to the United Way of Greater Victoria website, so it's uwgv.ca/Blue Love campaign, you can make a contribution to the program, and that will actually go to all the mental health agencies that are in partnership for that program. And we really appreciate the support, because there's a lot of people that do need counseling support, and we'd love to make sure that we can get that to those folks.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time today.
Do you want to help support Capital Daily's local journalism and connect your business with our engaged and curious Greater Victoria audience of over 50,000? Email our partnerships team at advertising@capitaldaily.ca. Thanks again for spending some of your day with us. If you enjoyed the show, please rate, review, subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes going forward. We post new shows every Monday to Friday. My name is Jackie Lamport. This is the Capital Daily Podcast. We'll talk to you on Monday.